The next case is 05-1964, Lori Weinfeld versus Robert Welling. Judge Sweeney will continue to sit in place of Justice Resnick on this case.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, good morning. My name is Ralph Dublikar, and I am here this morning representing the appellants Robert and Catherine Welling in the case that's before the court. This case presents the court with an opportunity to eliminate uncertainty and confusion among the lower courts of Ohio and to explicitly recognize the fourth branch of the tort of invasion of privacy, which is known and which will be referred to in this case as false light, as a viable and independent cause of action and a theory of liability. Recognizing this false light theory of invasion of privacy would put Ohio in line with the vast majority of other jurisdictions in this country. Well over 30 other states have adopted this theory. In addition, the United States Supreme Court in Time Incorporated versus Hill has recognized the theory. Section 652A of the Restatement of Second Torts has espoused this theory for many years, as well as Dean Prosser. Ohio has long recognized the tort of invasion of privacy, beginning in 1956 with the case of Hausch versus Peth. At that time, this invasion of privacy, known as false light, was not recognized because Dean Prosser did not actually come out with his work until 1960. The restatement did not come out until 1977. In 1982, this court, in fact, recognized the false light theory of invasion of privacy in the case of Sustin versus Fee, in a footnote where it outlined the four separate branches of invasion of privacy, including the false light theory of invasion of privacy. What has caused the confusion is that in the Sustin case, it did not the facts were not such as to bring up the false light theory. And then in subsequent cases, namely the Yeager case in 1983, and also the DeCorpo case in 1994, this court basically said, we don't think the facts of those cases are such that it requires us to either adopt or reject specifically this theory. And that was fine. The problem is that that has left the lower courts to kind of struggle, and there have been several lower court decisions trying to determine whether or not Ohio would specifically recognize this false light theory of invasion of privacy. And this court then accepted the proposition of law, number one in this case, to determine that specific issue. As I've indicated in the brief, and it's been conceded by counsel for the appellees, the vast majority of jurisdictions in the United States which have addressed this subject have come down on the side of recognizing the fourth branch of invasion of privacy.
Mr. Dublikar, let me ask you sort of a philosophical question. I guess take it as a premise, as a given, which has certainly been commented on by many, many authorities and commentators, that we live in a society in this country, a culture that has become far less civil than it used to be. Public discourse is far less civil than it was at one time, if you take that as a given. Does adding this remedy to our quiver of remedies that we have for misconduct, does that premise, that fact, I think it is, does that argue in favor of us adopting false premise, or does it argue against it?
I would say it argues in favor of it, and the reason for that is because I think that one way of addressing the incivility of public discourse is to have consequences that are recognized legally to deter people from uncivil conduct or uncivil discourse, if that's the case. I agree that in particular in this case, factually, what precipitated this case was the inability of two neighbors to solve their problems in a way that historically, I guess, people have solved problems who have lived next to each other. And the plaintiff in this case resorted to things such as videotaping and surveillance and other types of remedies to control or to protest the conduct of the neighbor. And in the false light theory, what we have in the situation factually again here is that the neighbor, suspecting that her neighbor had caused some damage, instead of going over and talking about it, resorted to posting reward posters and handbills in the neighborhood, not only in the neighborhood, but at the schools where their kids went to school, and at a place and at the place of employment where the neighbor worked, which was totally on the other side of the county from where this happened. And it was clearly designed to infer or imply that the neighbor had created or caused the damage. So I would address and answer the court's question. I think this helps because it then provides a legal remedy. Putting it the other way, what legal remedy would the, in this case it was the defendant because it was a counterclaimant, but what other legal remedy would a person have under that type of a scenario?
One of the arguments, as you know, is that if we recognize false light, there will be an avalanche of cases filed within which false light is the remedy sought. Should we be concerned about that?
I don't think so at all, Your Honor. First of all, we've had invasion of privacy as a recognized theory of liability for 50 years. I don't think there have been an avalanche of cases under invasion of privacy. There have been some, certainly. We've had three branches already recognized, and I don't believe there's been an avalanche of litigation. And frankly, this one is, I think, narrow enough that it would arguably, and I think admittedly, be designed to be a sort of a catch-all as perhaps a theory where maybe others like defamation, libel, slander, and other invasion of privacies don't quite fit. And that's what the arguments have been historically and in other jurisdictions. I don't think it opens a Pandora's box in any way, shape, or form for litigation. I think it simply gives a party who has been harmed another theory, perhaps, that doesn't quite neatly fit into the theories of the court that have already been recognized.
Mr. Dublikar, should that be legislatively created, or is that the authority of this court?
Well, I think it's the authority of this court. I think the courts have traditionally decided these cases and created these remedies. I think that if you go back to the beginning of invasion of privacy, it was a court-created theory. I think that historically in Ohio, the courts have been the ones that have articulated the invasion of privacy theories.
And in the other states, was it done through case decisions or was it done through enactments of the legislature?
Primarily case decision. I'm only aware of one state, I believe, that had legislated on this issue, and that was New York. I think everything else has been court decided, and primarily in the Supreme Courts of these various jurisdictions that we've cited in our brief. So it's been a court-related thing. I think the other way of putting it, frankly, is why not? Why would our Ohio not recognize this fourth branch of invasion of privacy? We've already recognized three, and three of the four branches have already been recognized as viable legal theories. This would simply add the fourth, which has been part of the overall invasion of privacy tort for many, many years. It just simply has not been specifically recognized in the state of Ohio.
Counsel, would the requirement for the publicity that unreasonably places the other in a false light before the public, would the requirement in your proposal require that the wrongdoer create that publicity?
I think so, yes.
Okay. So for someone to, for example, make a statement on a media interview that unreasonably places the other in a false light before the public.
Right.
Would that fit into your action?
I would think so, Your Honor. In fact, it comes up two different ways. If you look at the cases, it comes up either by way of the press, TV stations, newspapers, those kinds of things.
So using that media to further your activity of showing your neighbor in a negative,
right,
unreasonable light,
right,
or, as in this case, allegedly creating your own,
right,
poster, flyer, and using this. But you're...
Or it could even be a third way, and that is if the media itself, the TV station, for instance, that goes out and publicizes something in a false way about a person, or the newspaper, for instance, and there have been cases which have come up where the case has been filed against the newspaper or against the TV station. So it could be any of three different ways, I think.
And the Chief Justice asked whether, you know, the wisdom of expanding a field where we already have so many remedies and so much litigation, and you stated that really, you know, what's the harm? We already have causes of action. Based on the response you just gave, it seems to me that there would be an explosion of cases every time someone is interviewed on the media and says something negative about their neighbor that may not turn out to be, I mean, just merely their personal opinion. Why would that not be an example?
Because I think under the definition of the false light theory of invasion of privacy, there still must be either actual knowledge of the falsity or a reckless disregard for the falsity.
And,
so there
and
are,
oftentimes,
there are,
oftentimes, when you see the average citizen interviewed on the news, especially in many of the news presentations that we have, I think that the recklessness of the statements made certainly could be at issue.
Right. Well, I think that that's also an area where the courts have traditionally been well suited, the lower courts, to sort out.
And that's my point.
Cases.
Why should we burden the courts at this juncture with this type of activity?
Because I don't think, Your Honor, that this is going, I don't agree with the premise that this is going to create an explosion of litigation. I think that this is a narrow area that just simply fits into what we already have, and that it's not going to be something radically new and different than we've ever had before. That would be my answer.
Mr. Dublikar, are you advocating for the adoption of the restatement as,
yes,
as it is?
Yes.
Looking at your facts here, though, would it not, could we not say it's rather thin? I mean, here the notice that was sent did not even name anyone.
Right.
So the idea of what's reasonable to look at and say this is harming someone's reputation,
right,
or putting them in a false light when they're not even named.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's a factual question that would certainly have to be litigated, and in fact was litigated. And I think that it's hard in this context to give the court a real sense of what was going on here factually. And I think the answer to that question is, and I think the jury so found, that there was absolutely no question who this was directed to, even though concededly the name was not there, but it might as well have been, I guess.
If we find in your favor,
right,
what would be the remedy then procedurally that you would be expecting?
Well, I think what happens is the case gets remanded, and frankly, I think it would be remanded either way, and it has to go back down to the trial court because of what the Court of Appeals found in their decision, and this court did not accept the second proposition of law, which would have addressed the overall reduction of the jury verdict and new trial and all that sort of thing. So we have to go back and litigate the case again, and the issue would be whether the false light theory gets into the case by way of jury instruction, along with the other three on the invasion of privacy, because the invasion of privacy was the only theory upon which the jury found liability. So on a remand, I believe the case would be limited to an invasion of privacy claim by my clients against the appellees in this case. So I've got, my time is almost up, and I would like to reserve just a minute or two on rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Dubinkar. Mr. Dickinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, my name's Claire Dickinson. I'm here this morning on behalf of Appellee Lori Weinfeld. I'd like to start by addressing Justice O'Donnell's question about whether this is a matter for the legislature, because it raises an interesting point. I agree with the appellant's counsel that this theory has been adopted by courts in many, many states. However, what he is asking this court to do in this case is, in fact, act as a legislature, because he's asking this court to issue an advisory opinion adopting a new theory of Ohio law. The reason I say that it's an advisory opinion is because the facts of this case, as tried in the Stark County Common Pleas Court, do not raise this branch of privacy law, even if it were a part of Ohio law.
But if we were to reverse and remand, isn't that a decision for the trial judge to make, whether there are sufficient facts to charge the jury on this remedy?
If the court were to do that, that's correct. But that's not the way law is made by courts. Law is not made top down. It percolates up from the trial court to the appellate court to the Supreme Court. In this case, there was no evidence that would support a claim of invasion of privacy, false light.
Oh, but Mr. Dubinkar thinks there is. So that's how the case came to us, and it came from trial court appeals to us.
That's true, Your Honor, but you have to go back to the record. You have to look at what evidence was in the record in the trial court.
So you're just saying we can make that, the record is complete enough that on the facts that we can make that decision here, that there should not be, even if we recognize the legal right, that this is not the case to declare it because it's not effective here.
That's correct. This case is very similar to the Yeager case and the DeCorpro case, in which this court declined to recognize the false light branch of invasion of privacy because the facts in those cases were such that even if this theory were recognized, it would make no difference in those cases.
Counsel, let's just deal with the theory. You're saying factually it's not here, but let's assume it was. Is there no place in our legal world today for further development of the common law?
This branch of the common law, I would submit, is unnecessary. This branch of invasion of privacy overlaps defamation to such a large extent that there really is no reason to add this to our tort law.
Let me explore the explosion of litigation question. You've been around this business for a long time. Defamation, slander, libel cases, not easy. Would you agree?
I would agree.
It's probably hard when you got engaged in this to find other attorneys to even discuss their experiences with cases in this area of the law, is it not?
That's
because
correct.
Because they are rare.
Yes.
And do you really believe that if we adopted false light as a viable cause of action under the right factual circumstances, that that would suddenly turn this area into a ripe area for litigation?
What I would anticipate, Your Honor, is that there would be a number of claims made. I think they would be unsuccessful because it would be a very, very difficult.
And then very quickly, lawyers would say, this isn't any more fertile ground than
That's correct, Your Honor.
Than any other approach on this subject. That's tough cases.
Yes. And that relates to why this particular case doesn't present this question. Was pointed out, the pamphlet or the poster Ms. Weinfeld distributed to some extent doesn't mention the Wellings at all. In fact, the testimony before the trial court was not that she believed that the defendants in this case had broken the window at issue. She thought that their son had. Their son's not even a party in this case. Another problem with this particular case, one of the elements of the false light invasion of privacy claim is that the false light is false. There was no evidence before the trial court whatsoever, and this is the Wellings' burden of proof on this claim. They presented no evidence whatsoever that they did not, in fact, break the window. So if the argument is that somebody seeing this poster would infer that the Wellings broke the window, or at least were being accused of breaking the window, part of their burden of proof was showing that they hadn't done it. They failed to do that.
Counsel, I'm confused in reading this. Who rejected the remitter? Your client?
The Wellings rejected the remitter. There was a $250,000 punitive damage award
right.
against my client. Common Pleas Court granted a remitter to, I believe it was $35,000. The Wellings rejected that. Both sides appealed to the Court of Appeals. Now, Ms. Weinfeld argued in the Court of Appeals that the invasion of privacy under either theory was not supported by the record. The Court of Appeals looked only at the invasion of privacy, invasion of the seclusion arm of it, and said there's enough evidence in the record to support that. So we're not going to address question of whether this invasion of privacy false light exists under Ohio law. So that's another part of the problem with this case being here. The Court of Appeals didn't address the question. The facts do not support.
Did the counsel request an instruction from the judge on false light at the trial level?
I have to confess, Your Honor, that I do not know the answer to that. Did not become involved in this case until after this court had already granted jurisdiction. The record that I have does not include the instructions. I am working on an assumption that that instruction was given, but I do not know that for sure.
Mr. Dickinson, let me give you the chance to respond to the question I asked Mr. Dublikar about the premise that we live in a society in this country in which public discourse is not as civil as it used to be. Let's put it mildly. Why does this new remedy or this additional remedy why is it not appropriate for us to adopt this additional remedy in that instance? Given those circumstances, you may disagree with me, but many, many others agree that public discourse in this country is really woefully uncivil. And this seems to me this kind of touches that, or it addresses that issue, obviously not expressly.
Well, my belief, Your Honor, is that the area that this branch of invasion of privacy would cover, beyond what is already covered by defamation, is so narrow that I don't believe adopting it or not adopting it would have a significant impact on the public discourse.
So Mr. Duplikar says, why not adopt it? And your argument is well, a lot of, I guess, avalanche of lawsuits, but we should, if it's a proper remedy, we didn't worry about that when we adopted the battered woman syndrome as a defense to a charge of murder. If it was a proper remedy, in our judgment, or in the legislature's judgment, we adopt the remedies, don't we?
Yes, Your Honor, in the proper case. In the battered women's defense was adopted in a case in which the facts of that case.
Sure, they were right. They were right on.
Yeah. Presented right. That defense. The facts, and in a proper, in a case where there were facts that would support this cause of action, then I think the court should look at this cause of action in light of those facts and make a determination at that time.
So it seems to me your the strongest argument you're making to us is not that this may be an inappropriate remedy for the court to adopt, but this is an inappropriate case in which we should adopt.
Is an inappropriate case. If this court were to adopt this remedy, since we had a remitter, new trial, this case, regardless, is going back for a new trial. If this court adopts this remedy, and when it goes back to the trial court, the Wellings present the same evidence that they presented the first time this case was tried, there will not be sufficient evidence to support a finding on their behalf under this branch of privacy law. If there are no further questions, I will concede the
Thank
rest
you.
Of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Dickinson.
Thank you.
Mr. Duplikar, you've saved 3 seconds, but take 30. See what you can
Your
do
Honor.
With that.
Very quickly.
Mr. Duplikar, was there a jury instruction requested on false light?
Yes, Your Honor. And it was instructed. And I would also say that take issue with Mr. Dickinson's statement that if the case went back and was tried again on the same facts, there would be insufficient evidence. Well, the fact of the matter is it was tried on those facts. The instruction was given, and a jury verdict did come back in favor of the Wellings.
Were there interrogatories to break out the grounds for the jury verdict?
Yes, but I will say it did not break down the invasion of privacy claim. It just said invasion of privacy. It did not break it down into seclusion or false light or any of those four branches. I think if it were to be tried again, it would probably have to be broken down under the invasion of privacy.
In your opinion, if we pass the tort of false light, are many of the political commercials currently running subject to that claim?
That's a good question that I really hadn't given any thought to, but
because it seems to be a little easier standard to meet than the other three branches.
Right. It has to be, it's directed to the individual, and it has to be highly offensive to a reasonable person. I guess you could argue that maybe that would
they seem to be meeting that category.
Be, yes.
Well, isn't the public figure defense the answer to that question?
Because it has to be actual malice, and it's the same standards as applies in defamation, libel, slander. So I imagine, and we do have some cases arising out of the political arena, I believe, for defamation, libel, slander. Those cases get resolved in the trial levels or the appellate levels, and I don't see that, you know, I don't think this is going to have a major impact on those. The only other thing I wanted to address was simply the question of advisory opinion. This would not be an advisory opinion. This case was tried. The jury did find an invasion of privacy. The court did accept this case on the limited proposition of law as to whether the false light invasion of privacy was a viable legal theory. And so I don't think that the court addressing this issue is going to be in any way rendering an advisory opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Dulacar. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.